Tony Rock is a longtime stand-up comedian who is honing that craft here in Austin this weekend at Cap City Comedy Club. Two shows tonight, December 22nd. Two shows tomorrow, December 23rd. Go to capcitycomedy.com to snag any tickets that do remain. Tony, thank you so much for the time. How are you doing today?
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me. How's everything?
Everything is great. Welcome to Austin. You've been here since yesterday. If so, have you gotten to enjoy anything about the city just yet?
I've been to Austin several times. We did one show last night, Cap City, the new Cap City. I knew that I had performed at the club before. So when I got there, I'm like, wait, this doesn't look like the club that I was. And they told me they moved it. So I didn't know that. And then I went over to the mothership. I had to check that out. And they gave me the tour. They gave me the royal tour of the mothership. And that was pretty cool.
Oh, very nice. May get your thoughts on that in just a sec. But the new Cap City is great. The old Cap City, as much as I loved it, and it was a great place to see a show, it was in kind of in an armpit part of town. And the new Cap City is in the shiny new domain. And it's just a great club, too. Obviously, the Helium people came in, did a thing that we all appreciate in reviving that club. But what they've turned it into as just far as the comedy club aesthetic goes is second to none.
Yeah, it's really, really nice. Comics, we just really appreciate a good green room at this point. Like the crowds, of course, people coming out, but just that little downtime in the nice green room says everything.
What's important in a green room? Maybe a television with a decent monitor?
Gotta have a TV. Gotta have a TV that actually works. And that's not a smart TV, because I don't have Hulu or Roku, just a regular channel-changing television.
Oh, with the basic cable channels where you can maybe scroll through the DVR list, huh?
Give me some ESPN and some First 48 in the interim before I go on stage and I'm great.
And looking into things a little bit before our conversation right now, found out you are a huge basketball fan, Brooklyn Nets fan. When did you start rooting for the Nets? How far back does your Nets fansmanship go?
Okay, so my basketball trajectory is this. I was a Laker fan my whole life because of Magic Johnson. Magic Johnson is my favorite basketball player of all time. You know, Magic left, and it was like, well, who do I root for now? And then Shaq and Kobe regime came in, and I was like, okay, I'll ride with these guys for a little bit. Then the rift happened with Shaq and Kobe. I went with Shaq. Like, you got to go with the father or the mother. I went with Shaq to Miami. I'll root for Miami for a little bit. Then as soon as the news came out that there was going to be a team in Brooklyn, it was automatically determined that will be my team. That's Brooklyn. That's where I'm from. Now, the thing people don't know is where the Barclays Center sits used to be the hub for the New York Daily News. My father worked for the New York Daily News my entire childhood. So when they tore down the hub to build the Barclays, I figured, okay, that has a tie to my family. My dad used to work there. Now the new ground is the Barclays. So that's my team.
What'd your dad do for the New York Daily News?
Oh, he drove a truck for the New York Daily News. Dad was blue collar truck driver. And every one of my siblings, myself and every one of my siblings older than me, we all of our first jobs was working at the New York Daily News.
Oh, that's fantastic. How old were you and what were you doing?
About 16, as soon as I could get some working papers, and we would ride on the truck overnight and just throw the papers off in front of the supermarkets and throw the papers off in front of, you know, bodegas around New York City. So I kind of learned my way around the five boroughs very easily. If we were lucky enough to get that route that my dad had, we got to hang out with our dad for the whole night and just talk and tell stories and, you know, have a late lunch and early breakfast and all that stuff. It was pretty cool.
It's funny to think about just the direction that digital has taken everything. And there are plenty of positives to that, let's say, but there's also things that it's sad that they're no longer a part of that process anymore. Like, I used to love the physical copy of a newspaper. Some of my earliest memories as a kid were flipping through the Dallas Morning News sports page. May have been in the bathroom, maybe taking a few minutes too long, the legs start falling asleep or whatever, but like that doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. My dad drove a truck for the New York Daily News. My mom was a school teacher, so my mother stressed education. And one of her tricks was, well, if I can get them to read, I just want them to read anything. So we always had newspapers in the house. We always had stacks of papers in the house because my dad would give our neighbors, you know, free newspapers in the morning. So if my mother figured it out, like if they have to read, if they want to read something, we read sports every day. We read the funnies. And if there was a story that was like trending in the neighborhood that made it to the paper, she knew we'd be excited to read it because we knew the, you know, the people involved or the neighborhood we knew. So it was pretty, a pretty tricky way of my mom to get us to read every day. So I do miss a copy of the paper in my hand. I miss it a lot.
It's like sneaking vegetables into a pasta sauce. Yeah. Whether or not you realize it, there is something very beneficial going on there. And as far as the comic strips go, what were some of your favorites as a kid?
Dagwood. What was it? Dagwood.
Okay.
Calvin and Hobbes. That came a little bit later. Calvin and Hobbes came a little bit later. Hagar the Horrible. Yeah, we read them all.
One of my kids has gotten into Calvin and Hobbes, which I'm really happy about. I'm trying to introduce them to The Far Side, but that's pretty out there.
That came later, too.
Yeah, so maybe when they get to the teenage years, they'll be more receptive to something like that. Now, you have a little one at home, and I see just via social media and you talking on podcasts that he brings a ton of joy in your life. How old is your son now, 4 or 5 years old?
He'll be 4 in May, so he's like 3 and a half.
Okay, so where are we with the Christmas experience right now?
Oh, my God. I'm so glad you asked. Sorry for the kids that are watching this. I put the toys in the back of his mommy's truck so she can wrap them. She goes grocery shopping this morning with him, with Charleston, opens the trunk to put the groceries in. Luckily, he saw one toy. He saw one toy and had to have it. Fit in the parking lot, so she had to give it to him. So he has one toy now. And when she FaceTimed me about a half hour ago, he's like, "Dad, look what I got." I'm like, "How in the world did this happen?"
That one's explainable. At least you're not having to break the whole spoiler alert for anybody with a kid in the car right now. Change the channel unless you want the lie exposed. Because eventually you're going to have that Santa Claus conversation with him. So fortunately, he only got the one and didn't see the whole shebang, so that you have to let him know the reality about Santa too, you know?
You know what's interesting? A group of comics were talking about this last week at the Laugh Factory, and they asked me, "Are you going to tell him about Santa Claus?" And I said, "For what? Like, whatever he believes about Santa Claus, let him live in the fantasy. I don't know." I said, "If you guys show me one grown-up that still believes that, then maybe I'll have the conversation with him. But we all know how it ends. We all know we grow out of it, and he'll grow out of it. So why not just let him have the fantasy?"
You're right about
30-year-old walking around like we still believe in Santa Claus. Like, you're gonna grow out of it.
Absolutely. Unfortunately for my kids, when they ask me questions, I have to be completely upfront with them. And so my response to them is, "Do you want to know the truth, or do you want to know the BS that adults are telling you?" And they always want to know the truth. So I had to tell them about Santa. And now they are in third and second grade, trying to explain to their classmates that Santa's not real. And it is hostile out there in the Santa, no Santa crowd in elementary schools, apparently.
You have officially let your children ruin it for all their classmates.
Yeah, it's a problem, though, Tony. My kids have unfortunately been saying cuss words since way too early of an age, too. But it's one of those things where it's like, I know how I speak. And so I need to try and be upfront with them and say, "Look, I'm going to say certain words. You can use those words too if you want to, but just you need to understand how you're using them and who you're using them around. If you say the F word around one of your grandmothers, that's going to be a big problem for you, and I'm not going to be bailing you out there. But if you're upset with something and you drop a damn or maybe an F word if it's well-timed, well, the person who loves comedy in me is going to have to get some appreciation out of that, you know?"
Yeah, no. See, I don't know about the curse words, but I do have a rule with Charleston. If he gets in trouble in school, if it's funny, I might let it slide. So now, even at home now, he does things and gets in trouble and gets put on timeout. And then when I come home, if mommy's telling me what happened, and he'll look at me and says, and he'll say, "Dada, was it funny?" And I say, "You know what, kiddo? That one was funny. Come on, you're good. You're out of timeout. You're good. That was funny."
You're seeing the sense of humor really come along then, huh?
Every day. What does Uncle Chris do? Uncle Chris is funny. What does Dada do? Dada's funny. What does Uncle Jordan do? Uncle Jordan's funny. What's Charleston going to do? Charleston's going to be funny. Like, okay, here we go.
Other than the obvious content that it can provide on stage, has having a kid shaped how you go about creating stand-up comedy at all?
Not so much how I create it. No, the process, my process is still my process. But I actually feel that I'm more timed with it. But what I mean by that is because I have so much time with him, when I'm with Charleston, it's just Charleston time.
Yeah.
And then I have to regiment my time more now, because when it's our time, it's just our time. I don't want to be busy. "Hey, Dada's writing. Hold on one second," you know, because I don't want to be dismissive of his time. So now I'm more structured with my writing.
That's good that you can compartmentalize that and make sure that you're being completely present for him.
I said that I have to be aware of when the time we spend is memories and moments. memories and moments. So I don't want to ever be in the time that is his time doing something else, because that's not a good memory for him. And we're not creating moments that are going to last forever.
Yeah, very well said there. Embarrassing admission time. I know you're a big NBA fan, big Nets fan. I may get your thoughts on this year's Nets in a sec. I know they're toiling in play-in game land, which is an awful spot for any NBA fan base to be. But I had to give up the NBA back in 2006 as a result of one of those Miami Heat teams that you rooted for with Shaq and Dwayne Wade winning that championship. That was the final straw for me, dude. I'm not going to lie. I watched that series play out and looked. Dwayne Wade was great, but I also saw a lot of referee manipulation in that series too. And that it turned me off for good to the sport, to where even though I was a Mavs fan growing up, watched them win that championship a little bit more than a decade ago. It was fun for Dirk and just how confident that Miami team was, but I couldn't appreciate it like I once might have been able to. So kudos to you for sticking with it. And what do you make of this year's Nets team?
You know, first, can I say this? I've seen that a lot this year. This year, I've seen a lot of, like, they just letting this go. Like, the refs are just letting this go in one direction. It's more obvious. I think it's more obvious now. I've seen a game recently where the Lakers, it was a Laker game, and LeBron called the timeout when the ball, nobody had possession of the basketball. But, like, they're scrambling for the basketball, and he calls timeout. And it's like, everybody knows you can't call timeout if you don't have possession of the basketball. They let him get called the timeout. They go on to win the game. It was just like, it kind of soured the whole experience of sitting through the whole game from beginning to end, that the refs would have so much of a input in the outcome. So I didn't like that at all. The thing with the Nets is this. So they lose quite a few games, but when I go to the games, my thing is, as long as this game is interesting, as long as I'm sitting there and there's a little bit of interest in, okay, they were down 10, they back, they got it within 3, and now they're up 5, and it's back to 2. As long as that goes on, I'm not expecting them to go to the finals. I'm not expecting them to be the number one seed coming out the East. I just want to sit and watch a basketball game that is interesting. So when it's over, oh, they lost again, but it kept my attention for the 2 hours, 2.5 hours. So I'm good with that.
So I heard you say on another podcast that you're a big fan of KD and Kyrie, even though they're no longer members of the Nets. People here in Austin love some Kevin Durant. Of course, he played one season here at Texas, won the Naismith Award as the best player that year in college, and has gone on to a very successful NBA career as well. What do you love most about watching KD's game?
That was actually when I remember KD from Texas. I remember, like, just one Saturday afternoon watching college basketball and was blown away. Who is this guy? This young boy is incredible. And I followed his career the whole time. I followed the Seattle KD, OKC. Didn't really care too much for the Warriors after what had happened. Like, they lost Game 7. The next week, he signed to the Warriors. That was weird. I hear some conspiracy theories about that.
What's that?
Nike didn't have a stronghold in that Warriors team. Klay was with the Chinese company. Steph was with Under Armour.
Wow.
Nike didn't have any player in that 5-6 year run that they had. Nike didn't have a player in that camp. So Nike forced him to go to the Warriors.
Whoa. That makes a lot of sense considering how much shoe money is in basketball.
Yeah. And they were, you know, everybody was Warriors fans out of nowhere. Everybody was, a bandwagon Warriors fan, but Nike had no stake in it. Yeah. And as soon as he got hurt, he was like, I'm out.
Sure enough.
I have fulfilled my obligation. I'm gone. But I just like how smooth this game is. I like his nickname. I like Easy Money Sniper, because that's exactly what he plays like. If you could put a game to that nickname, his game is Easy Money Sniper.
Yeah, it really is. And he's on an interesting Suns team now, too.
Yeah, if those three guys could ever play together, that'd be amazing to see.
So you got the grand tour of the comedy Mothership last night. I know that their main room show was actually canceled because of some travel issues, I guess. But what were your impressions of seeing that place for the very first time?
Man, that big room was amazing. You could tell a comic had some input in this room. You could tell a comic was involved in what it should look like, how it should feel, what should be available, like the little room off to the side of the stage where you can watch both rooms, like the little comics hang out. It was done really nice. It was really, really nice. I like it.
Oh, the green room where you can go out on the balcony on one side, or I'm not sure what it looks like in the smaller room. Was there a show going on in the smaller room when you were there in the little boy?
Yes. The little boy room and the, what they call it, the fat, what was the big room called?
Fat Man and Little Boy, named after the atomic bombs dropped at the end of World War II. the Comedy Mothership is another interesting place, and it's just one of those things that you can look at now and just marvel at how Austin is really in the last couple of years become a sort of stand-up mecca. We have so many good spots where people can perform stand-up comedy. For you, as somebody who has performed here in the past, could you have ever really foreseen something like this happening in Austin?
Every time I've come to Austin, I've either seen a really good comedy show or I've been a part of it. And we were talking about the Mothership, but Cap City has done very nice too. Like, they're both really supportive of stand-up comedy. And I love a venue that's like for the artists, you know, and they both have that feel like they care about the art form. It's not just asses and seats and a 2-drink minimum. They both have that feel. I've come here, I've done comedy festivals here. I've seen Dave Chappelle here. It's just amazing. Every time I come, it's like, Austin is different, man. I love it.
Okay, so with stand-up comedy going through a sort of golden era right now, Tony, it comes with the responsibility of helping us let people who are new to the art form know that there's certain ways to conduct yourself at the comedy club, right? Like, in this clip culture where crowd work is helping people to become more popular, it is enabling those who don't know any better to shout out during shows. And we need to let people know it's not your responsibility to talk during the show. It is a performance. If the comedian wants you to talk, he will address you. Otherwise, shut up. Laugh when you need to laugh, clap when you need to clap, and don't turn it into Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Yeah, you're right about don't yell out, don't make it about yourself. But I think a professional comic knows how to handle that, because people will yell out a lot during my show, because I'll say something about, you know, about a topic, and it's like, no, we don't. And it's like, you either give them just ignore them, or you say something that'll just make them sit down. But I think professional comics know how to handle that.
Like, they're making a political objection.
Yeah, yeah. I think about something that happened last week. Last week, it was a young lady in the room, and she said, "I say the joke about I'm not a Trump supporter, but I do support Trump supporters because I've never seen blind loyalty like that before in my life." And the lady's just like, "No, no, he's doing great things. He's closing the borders." And I'm like, "Okay, we're not going to turn this into a commercial. You can feel how you want to feel." And then the room's like, "Boo." And I'm like, "See what you did? See what you did?" They started booing her. And I'm like, "See what you did? You make now everybody hates you. So just sit down and be quiet." But, you know, that type of stuff is like, you can nip it in the bud quickly if you know what you're doing.
Are you getting close to shooting that next special? I mean, I'm assuming that you're feeling really good about the current hour that you have going on. I'm guessing you probably have a lot more than an hour too.
Thank you very much for asking. So I shot a special in March of 2023.
Okay.
I did all the shopping and the pitching, and nobody bid at it. I couldn't get a deal. I got very little help from management. I got very little help from my agency. I got very little help from really nobody helped. Every dime spent to make this happen was my own money. I literally spent my own money to get this done. I believe in it wholeheartedly. I feel like I didn't really get a lot of help from other places, management, agency, you know, comedy clubs, because nobody else had anything to do with it, because I did it 100% myself. So with that said, I'm currently in the process of trying to get it on streaming services, Roku, Tubi, Hulu, Amazon. There is a site that you go to, you send the special, they have to clear it. You have to send them a closed caption version. You have to send them different formats for different streaming services. It's a process. It is a process. But I know a few comics that did it, and they have their specials on maybe 6 or 7 streaming services. It's an 80-20 split, and they're making some good money. Mm. So if this goes right, I'm hoping that by January 10th, that it'll be up on streaming services. And if it is, if it's up by the end of January, I pray that it doesn't take that long. I'm ready to shoot and do it all over again myself by, I'd say, April. I'll go back in and do it all over again myself and just use that same route, because I'm not going to wait on just whoever the higher ups and the people that anoint this comic as the guy. I'm not going to wait on him to say, Tony Rock can do a special. I have the material. I have the time. I have the stage presence. I can do it myself. The worst thing you did, industry, is let me realize I can do it myself.
I was just about to ask you, because we've seen a lot more comedians in the last couple of years just post things straight to YouTube themselves. So for whatever reason, this falls through. Is that the next option?
Yes. I was going to go YouTube route. I was going to go to YouTube route, but I didn't have anything in the YouTube space. So I didn't want to put the special up first. If I had 1 million YouTube followers right now, I would do it no problem.
Sure.
But I just started putting content on. My podcast actually is on YouTube. It's on my podcast we have two episodes up. It's called Live from the Green Room. It's on YouTube/Live from the Green Room. Please check that out. We have two episodes up right now. And once that starts building, if that builds up, and I think, you know, we have enough of a following, I'll put the special on there.
Tony, thank you so much for the conversation today. I know it was a little bit random and all over the place, but I love it. Try and mix it up a little bit. I know you've told your story 1,000 times. You've talked about your brother 1,000 times. This is about you today and encouraging people to go check you out. Cap City Comedy Club, a couple shows tonight, a couple shows tomorrow night. You know you're going to be out. It's Christmas time. You're going to be out and about. There aren't a ton of tickets left to any of those shows. Go to capcitycomedy.com. If you're walking around the domain here in a little bit, go see at the box office. If there are tickets, there may be, and you will not regret it. Tony, thank you again, man.
Thanks for having me, man. I appreciate it. And if you get a chance, I know we didn't talk about my brother, but go see him too. He's a good comic too. He's pretty good.
Thanks to Gentleman Jesus for the intro and outro music. Hear more of his work at gentlemanjesus.com. And thanks to you for hanging out. For more of the show and to connect on social media, visit booksonpod.com. Talk to you next time on Books on Pod.